And motherfuckers alike, this is another episode of evolutionary.org. Up your ass, with or without condom, Matt.
Can't tell you. This is hardcore. This is raw, buddy. Top secret.
This is raw. Okay? No lube, no nothing. Just raw. We have another great episode. Ahead of you, we have some awesome topics, awesome segments. Your favorite segments are on the way. First of all, we just passed Christmas. We're almost to New Year's, so this is kind of the honeymoon phase between Christmas and New Year's. So I have to ask you, Matt, how was your holiday?
It's crazy for me because it's so busy. We try to go see everybody and, you know, do everything in the matter of a day. And it's just insane. But it's, you know, it's good. It's all about the kids for us. They get everything they want. They're excited. And, you know, that's what makes it fun. But it's good to see family and everything, too. So I can't complain here about it at all. You?
Good. Yeah, good. I actually saw something funny today. It was on online. There was this dad, he played a joke on his daughter, and she's like 5 years old, 6 years old, and he basically said, okay, bring me a gift, bring me one of the gifts. So she brings him the box, you know, the wrap box, and he's like, okay, this one's for you, but look what I'm going to do, and he takes it to the fireplace, and he throws it in the fireplace. The box was really empty, it didn't have anything in it, but she thought it was one of her gifts. So she starts flipping out, crying, you know, saying, Daddy, burn my gift, blah, blah, blah. It was so cute. I felt really bad for her. So, I mean, I know how, like, important presents are to kids. And it was funny, but at the same time, I felt really bad. I'm not sure if that's a good idea for a dad to be doing stuff like that, though.
I've seen something similar to that. See, it wouldn't work for us because we don't put anything out until Christmas Eve, right when the kids go to bed. They don't get to see anything. But I have seen where parents will put a whole bunch of exactly what you said, boxes wrapped with nothing in them. And every time the kids are bad, they'll throw one of the presents in the fire. And they'll tell them, you keep it up, keep up the attitude, and you'll just keep losing them one by one. I've seen this something like that too. It may work, or it may just be terrible. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. I'm not sure. Yeah, if that's working, obviously, because she flipped out. I'm not sure that parenting strategy has worked so far. But we have a really cool relationship question. Let's start off, and this one's for you. This person's asking. They're saying him and his girlfriend are both 35 years old. They've been seeing each other for almost a year. He says that she's really special, but he's the type of guy who likes his independence. He says he really wants to get married one day and thinks she is the one that he could spend his life with. But he wants to know, how do I know when the right time is to get married? And actually, to follow up on this, I watched Avatar today. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Matt, but James Cameron was the, I think he was the writer, director, producer, you know, one of those things. But I actually was looking at the James Cameron. He's the same guy who did Titanic, and he's been married 5 times. So I just have to scratch my head at, you know, you have the extreme of the person who gets married too quickly to the wrong person, and you have the extreme of a person who's like not sure if they want to get married, and those are the types of people who stay single to like their 50s. So what are your thoughts on this?
Did he say if he's living with her or not?
No, he didn't say he was living yet, but that's actually okay. A good idea, yeah.
Yeah, so like for me, that's the next step, because with independence being an important thing for him, that's going to be the biggest shock, is moving in with somebody, whether you know, you're going to live at your house, her house, you're going to buy a house together, whatever it is. We actually had a topic, you know, that had some similar aspects with the guy moving into the girl's house, Because that can be tough too. If he decides, you know, yeah, let's try living together, and he moves in with her and he likes his independence, all of a sudden it's all her shit in the house. He's trying to find his place. It can be a little dicey. But I think you have to live together first, because you got to get used to that, where, you know, you're always knowing where the other person is. You're always around. You kind of lose your personal space, if you know what I mean. So without doing that, I would never say, yeah, just jump into marriage, because, man, the game changes when you move in together, and all of a sudden he may be with her every day and be like, wow, I'm sick of this. Like, I can't just escape, right? There's no escape. There's going out with your buddies, but at the same time, she's going to want to know where you are. And hey, you know, like, if you're going to be late, you know, send me a text message. And so for a guy that likes his independence, I have a feeling it's going to, you know, be a real shock for him. So that'd be my first piece of advice, would be figure out how you're going to do it. But you need to live together, because that completely changes the relationship, and that'll make you sure that, you know, she is the right one.
So, you know, let me just say something, and then I'll let you follow up, Matt, because I'm sure you're going to want to add something. But, you know, I've read a lot of books on dating and stuff like that, and I've read a lot of books by Patty Stanger, and she tends to be more pro-women with her advice, but she really kind of makes sense in that she says, before you move in, you need to basically, you know, give the woman some type of promise. And she says that you should give the woman a ring, because that's the way of progressing the relationship, because moving in is a very big deal. You give her a ring, now you're engaged, then you move in, because that's the way of kind of, you're giving her something and she's giving you the commitment in return. She also says that you should have the, you know, respect for the woman to basically, after a year, you should be proposing. Because you're sending the message that, hey, I'm serious, okay? I'm looking for long-term with you, blah, blah, blah. And if you don't have that respect for her, then you should basically move on. Because if after a year together, you're still not sure if you want to be with this person, you owe it to her to move on before it progresses further. Now, I'm not saying that that's, you know, that's not what you have to do, but I'm saying it makes sense. I'm not sure if you should do a year, you should do a year and a half, or you should do 2 years. But I do think at some point you owe it to her and you owe it to yourself to either make a commitment to the person or move on. So I do agree with that. And I also agree, if you're going to move in with someone, you should have some sort of commitment. Because, I mean, you got to move the next step. And if you move in together and shit doesn't work out, then you both can go your separate ways. You don't have to be married yet. So I do like what you said, Matt, moving together. Because I moved in with people and, you know, it didn't work out and we went our separate ways. No harm done. But if you get married too quickly after moving in and things don't work out, then what do? At least, you know, you guys can keep your independence. So follow up on that, but also tell us about how you knew it was the right time to get married. What are some signals that you can look for? Some white flags instead of red flags?
Yeah, it's tough because I wouldn't want him, you know, this is just me. I wouldn't want to get engaged first, because if you get engaged, that's your commitment to get married and you're not there yet. I got no issue with some type of promise or getting a ring that's not an engagement ring. Honestly, I think it can be settled with just a conversation, because she's probably feeling the same way, or, you know, has some similar thoughts, because women are like that, right? They want to settle down usually quicker than men do, and they want that commitment usually quicker than men do. So I would kind of just talk to her and say, you know, I feel like we're ready to take it to the next level. And I think if we're going to see where this is going to go, we have to you know, try to live together, whatever that's going to look like, you know, or however you're going to have that talk. But I think I would move in first and see how that goes. And then I would say that year, that is a good time frame. After that year, I wouldn't mind, you know, you'd either have to get engaged or you got to move on, you know, because if you're living together for a year, you're going to know. And, you know, keep in mind too, like a wedding, if you're going to plan a wedding, you don't just get, unless you're just going to go up to City Hall and get married. If you're going to actually have a wedding where you got, you know, a couple hundred people and both families and stuff, it's going to take a year and a half or 2 years to plan that stuff. So, you know, that is down the road. You know, once you move in, you get engaged, all that, it takes that long, you know, and it takes a shitload of money. So just be prepared for that. For me, it's kind of hard to say because this guy's 35. I'm 35 right now. I got married. I was 22. So the things I look for now, or I would look for, are way different kind of than I would at that age. I think initially it was kind of, you know, the lust factor is why we got together. And then it was just early on in our relationship, you know, this is where I'll go. I'm kind of just thinking on the fly here, but early on in our relationship, we were actually living in two different countries, believe it or not. Only 2 hours apart, but I was in the US, she was in Canada. And so we went through a lot of ups and downs. And I think no matter what happened, we kept being pulled together. So that's kind of, that's going to be my the biggest thing for me looking back now is, you know, it would have been real easy with any of these little things for us to have just said, you know, this is too difficult. You know, it's really hard. I could do a 6-hour show on trying to move to another country. It's insane because we've actually done it both ways and lived together in both countries. It's not easy. It's not even close to what it used to be 20 years ago. So all these little things we dealt with along the way, and then even through our marriage, like we've had two of our kids actually pass away at different times, and somehow we just stick together and, you know, work through things. So I think if everything's perfect, you're probably in the honeymoon stage. If you had ups and downs so far and you're still pulling together, then I think that's a huge part. You don't ever want to lose that friendship part, you know, aspect of the relationship. So, you know, look at it that way too. Look at it as when, you know, the amazing sex is gone and, you know, it's not a super high all the time. When it just settles down, is that somebody you can live with as your best friend on a day-to-day basis? You know, try to look at it that way. Hope that helps.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into some, you know, these types of topics, you know, in the future relationship segments. So, you know, we could talk for hours about this. This is a fascinating one. But we'll move on. We're going to talk about Fix My Cycle, Bruh. So this is a guy, he's 30 years old. He wants to do a third cycle. He is 6'3", 225 pounds. And he's body fat in the low teens. So he is a big, muscular motherfucker. He says that he wants to try Trenace for the first time. He wants to do it for 6 weeks. And then he wants to switch to Primo for 10 more weeks. And he is using testosterone at a TRT dose. So he wants to know if that would be a good cycle. So, you know, let me chime in on this first, give my opinion, and I'll let Matt chime in. I actually think this is not a bad cycle, but what I would tell this guy is run the Primo from day one along with the Tren. And the reason for that is because the Primo, by the time the Tren's out of the system, by week 8, he's going to be running Tren Ace for 6 weeks. So that means Tren will be in the system for 8 weeks. That is plenty to get really good results off Tren Ace, and you're actually smart to cut it a little short, just that 6 weeks, and let the esters clear for a couple more weeks, because by then the side effects will be getting, you know, really, really intense. So you kind of cut it short and then leave it for another time. So that's actually not a bad idea. And then by the time you're off the trend, the Primo will be really, you know, kicking in at a high, you know, a high amount. The Primo is going to take 4, 5, 6 weeks to really hit maximum amount. So you can kind of let the Primo roll the rest of the way. You can probably go like, I'd go 14 weeks. I wouldn't go 16 weeks. So I cut it to like 14 weeks because you're only on your third cycle. You don't want to start, you know, running steroids for long periods of times. Matt, what's your opinion here?
I don't mind that idea, Steve. Honestly, your plan sounds decent. I think if it was me and if I was kind of working with this guy, I'd probably just drop the Primo altogether and save it for another run. But like I said, you don't have to do that. This guy's obviously in really good condition. Like he's got a, you know, pretty low body fat, good muscle mass on him. He's pretty tall. I think with it only being a third cycle, I'd probably just run your test like you plan, run your TRT dose, and then run your trend for 6 weeks, just kind of so you could experience what it's like and what it'll do for you. Because I don't know, you know, being that size, if you're going to be the guy that's going to want to get really big on trend. Some people, you know, it makes them want to eat and they feel so strong, they just want to grow and get big. I don't know if that guy is going to want to get much bigger than he is. He may be the guy that wants to just, you know, lean up a bit and add a few pounds of lean muscle because he's already in a good spot. So I think you could do either with Tren. And I think I'd like to know how he responds to it and how he likes it. But I have no issue with running the Primo kind of in the background because it is mild and it's going to really enhance the cycle. So I guess either way is good, but I think I'd probably save the Primo and then use that for down the road. And you'll have a little more knowledge on your body. You'll be able to play with it. I don't know. I don't think, Steve, you mentioned what his trend dose was, but I wouldn't mind, you know, somewhere around 300 milligrams per week, give or take, I think is good for a first time guy. The first time I used it, I used 400 milligrams, and I actually had quite a bit of side effects trying to sleep, and I was so freaking hot. So I would actually have, you know, liked to start a little bit lower. So I think maybe 300 would be good. It'll be a really nice cycle because you won't need a whole shit ton of supports. You know, you only have a TRT dose of test. So you probably don't even need an AI. I'd have one on hand, but at that dose, you're probably not even going to need it. Trend doesn't aromatize, so you're going to be nice and dry there. It's really more about what you're going to run alongside the trend to keep the sides down and just for your overall health. You know, you're going to want to use things like Carterin to help with the, you know, the endurance, because Tren will just crush your endurance. So you'll want to use Carterin. You want to use N2Guard. Tren's really harsh as far as your organs. So, you know, the N2Guard will help, you know, with cholesterol, prostate, heart, all those things, you know, just overall to keep you healthy. So I think it'd be really nice to run a cycle like that and not have a friggin' shitload of estrogen to worry about and those kind of things. So if I, you know, were to talk to this guy, I'd really want to dig into it more and get a lot more details from him, like really specific. And then I'd be, you know, be able to pick a better option. But I think either what Steve said or just the trend with the test, either one's going to be great for this guy, whatever his goals are going to be.
There's a couple more options you have. Instead of doing what Matt said, do the opposite. Take the trend away and just do TRT dose with Primo. You could do Primo at 500 milligrams a week with a TRT dose of testosterone and then save the trend for like a fourth, fifth, or even sixth cycle. You know, that's another option for you. I don't know. You didn't say what you ran your first two cycles, so I don't know if you've run Primo before. But if you haven't, you know, just run Primo with a very low testosterone dose and see how you like Primo. Let the Primo work its magic. And then there's another option too. How about this? Take away the testosterone and then run a low dose of Tren, which is your androgen, and then run 500 milligrams of Primo, which is your mild anabolic, and you can run those together. And that would be a fun little cycle too. I like the Tren Primo cycle because Tren suppresses your immune system and Primo boosts your immune system. And Tren is an androgenic and Primo is a mild anabolic. So they kind of yin and yang each other very well. So you have those options to think about too. So, but third cycle might be a little too early to be running Tren, but like Matt said, you are a big motherfucker, so you obviously already have quite a bit of mass on your frame. So I wouldn't have a problem if you ran Tren. Just keep in mind, you know, once you start using Tren, you're going to want to run it a lot. You know, you're going to really not feel like you're running. It's going to be hard to run something like EQ or Primo or even testosterone later on because Tren is so fucking powerful. So once you open that can of worms, you're going to want to abuse Tren. And that's what I went through. I ran Tren. I think Tren was like my sixth cycle. But after I ran Tren, I was like, fuck, I just want to keep running Tren. So I ran Tren for like two and a half years off and on. And then I just got sick of it, you know, and now, like, I don't even want to mess with Tren because I hate the fucking side effects. So just keep that in mind. So, you know, let us know how it goes, definitely. But it sounds there's all kinds of different options.
All right, let's move into our diet question. You guys have been awesome with sending in your email questions on the diet, and I love that because – you know, there's so much we can get into with food, and that's really where a lot of these results come from. So I'll read you this one. This is we got an email from Johnny. He lives in Cleveland, and he says, "Hi, Steve and Matt. I'm going to be starting my first cycle and was wondering if intermittent fasting will work. Typically, I eat six meals spread throughout the day when trying to add muscle and have had success. I want to gain mass but keep fat gain low on the cycle. Will intermittent fasting work well?" It's a good question. There's, you know, one of the big differences now from back in the day is there are so many of these diets come out and they get labeled. You know, you got intermittent fasting, you got keto, you've got paleo, Atkins, and then you got all these programs like, you know, Weight Watchers and Slim Fast when you're talking about losing weight. And there's so many frigging apps and shit on phones and computers and everything. So we've just made this so complicated. Will intermittent fasting work? Sure. It can work just fine. It really just comes down to what your goals are and you know, if you're going to be getting the right amount of calories for those goals. I have no problem with intermittent fasting at all. I actually like giving your body some time to focus on things other than digestion. I have no issue with that at all. I think a lot of people are scared of it when they're on cycle because they feel like, you know, you always got to be pumping your body full of protein and food and all this. The other side of it is he mentions he's ate six meals spread throughout the day with success, naturally trying to add muscle. So on one hand, I look at that and I say, well, if that's worked for you, basically, whatever, if you're going to do the same thing while you're on cycle, it's just going to enhance what you're already doing. So it may not be the time to play with a new diet at the beginning. You might want to stick with it. But to answer the original question, for me, will it work? Sure. Intermittent fasting will work. If you're going to stick to it, if you're going to plan it out, if you're going to, you know, follow it strictly on your cycle, it'll work just fine. It's just whatever you want to do. Just, you know, if you want to try it out, go for it.
What I found that with certain steroids, the more androgenic steroids, it's going to be very difficult to intermittent fast. So intermittent fasting, for those of you who don't know, is typically going to be something like an 18-hour fast and then 6-hour window of eating. So you'd eat between, let's say, noontime to 6 o'clock or from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m., you know, and then you would not eat anything from, you know, the 8 p.m. all the way till 2 p.m. the next day. So you're fasting during that big window. But the thing is, when you're running something like Tren, something energetic, or you're running Nutrabol, or you're running HGH, stuff that cause you to be insulin, more insulin resistant, okay, on the body, you really need to spread your carbs out. You need to eat, like every couple hours, because if you don't, you'll start getting these hypo symptoms. You'll start getting all these side effects. You'll have difficulty, you'll be short-tempered, you'll have more aggression in a negative way. You'll have insomnia, you won't be able to sleep, you'll get more sweats, and, when you're doing that. So I found that it really depends on the steroid you're running. If you're running a mild stack, you can get away with it, intermittent fasting. But if you're running something more with more side effects, more androgenic, intermittent fasting is probably not a good idea. So I would tell you to kind of experiment with it. But I know with me, when I'm running Tren, there's no way I can intermittent fast. There's no way I can do any type of fasting. I have to spread my carbs out. I have to keep carbs on hand. I have to keep them. I usually have like frozen pancakes with honey on hand because I'll get up in the middle of the night in a sweat, shaking. I'll have the low blood sugar, and I'll have to go and like cook, make some pancakes and make some honey with it. And it kind of takes the edge off there. So anyone who's run Tren a lot, they'll describe something similar happening to them, and that's actually what's happening, is you're getting a low blood sugar. And also when it comes to your libido, your erectile dysfunction, stuff like that too, keeping carbs spread out and not having low blood sugar can enhance what happens in the bedroom. So if you have low blood sugar, it's going to be difficult to even have sex because you're not getting that your body's not having that glycogen to kind of tap into. And then you'll start notice your workouts are shitty, you're not having as much strength. So you really need to feed your body. You need to feed your body when you're running something like Tren. So that's food for thought. It's going to be easier for some people, it's going to be harder for others. It just depends.
You know what? It's probably a safer bet to stick with the 6 meals spread, just for the simple fact of first cycle. Guys, they typically add a good chunk of weight, and that's not because they're fasting. It's because they're eating on top of their gear and their training. So I think the risk is, you end up getting that low blood sugar, or you end up getting to where you're just fucking starving. From not eating, and then you end up binging or eating like a pizza or something you shouldn't do. And then the next thing you're putting on sloppy weight. And that's no good. That's not good for your heart health. That's not good for how you look. So I think, if you're prepping all your meals, it's going to prevent you from that, up and down of starving to so full, I'm going to explode, and then back to starving again. It'll kind of keep you level throughout and allow you to make better food choices. So it might be safer in that aspect. I'm assuming with the first cycle, he's probably running, just testosterone or test and D-ball, something like that. But if by chance he's running DECA, I don't know about you, Steve, but DECA is one with hunger that just, like, I will want to eat everything. That would be really tough to try to fast on DECA. Trend for me doesn't get me starving like that. I know some guys, they want to eat a ton, and some guys it actually upsets their stomach. EQ is another one. For me, it does nothing, not up or down, but a lot of people do get hungry on EQ. So with a first cycle, I guess you don't really know how you're going to respond. But if I had to guess, if you're just doing test or like test and D-ball, you're probably going to be pretty hungry. So I think, maybe don't fix what isn't broken. But if you really want to try it out, there's no right or wrong here. It's not going to be wrong to do intermittent fasting, because if you can fight through it, you'll be fine. You'll still get really good results. It's just kind of, I'm trying to think of what would be optimal and what would be easier to be consistent with in this aspect, in this cycle. So I'd probably go with the 6 meals if I had to pick one. All right, I guess you ready to move on, Steve? We'll get into some training.
Good. What do you got?
All right, man. I got another email here. Who is this one from? Mark. And he just says he's from the East Coast of the U.S. And his email says, I have been training for the better part of the last 10 years. I have been out of the gym for 6 months for reasons I don't really want to get into. It was not an injury, but was personal matters. I know you guys recommend compound movements for new guys, so I wonder if it would be the same for me getting back into things, or would I be better to just go back to what I was doing when I was last in the gym? Thanks for your help. Good question. He's got a good base, and he's been fairly consistent for the better part of the last 10 years. That's a good chunk of time. So you know what? He's probably around 30, probably been in the gym from 20 to 30, which is really good. I don't think you need to necessarily come back and, you know, do like a 5x5 or just compound lifts. That's not going to be bad. It's not going to hurt you in any way. I think what will hurt and what hurts most people is coming back too fast, too heavy, too quickly. And that's where the injuries happen. So he hasn't had an injury, but he's not going to be in good condition. 6 months is a long time to not be in the gym. So I would come back. I would just kind of do, you know, more whole body workouts, or maybe just an upper one day and a lower another day. But I would keep the weights light, keep the reps, you know, not crazy high, because you're going to have crazy, crazy soreness if you go too hard, and you're just going to be at risk of injury. So you kind of have to play with it a bit. Steve, I'll let you get into it and then come back to me. I'll follow up again on some more.
Usually, you know, I'll say this. This is kind of a cliche. It's not like a rule or anything, but it's a kind of a guesstimate, in that when you're taking time away from fitness, how long does it take you to get your conditioning back? And I always tell guys it takes about half as long as you were out. So in your case, you were out for 6 months. It's going to take you about 3 months to gain your conditioning back. So that's the first step. You really have to accept that. And a lot of guys just want to come back magically and be at right where they were when they stopped. And that's just not going to happen. But the good news is body memory and muscle memory are real. So you will come back. But you have to accept that, you know, when you first come back, you're going to be sore. And it's going to take you some time to work through that soreness. So coming back and going balls to the wall, you know, if you do that, you're going to be so fucking sore that you're going to be sore like for a week. It doesn't make any fucking sense to do that. So just come back. I would get on a full body plan, a full body workout. Do a light full body workout, okay, every other day for like, I don't know, 2-3 weeks. Then you can transition to, you know, your 3-4-5 day split where you're working a different muscle group each time. And then by then, your conditioning will start improving enough where you're not going to be sore like crazy. So then you can start hammering away more and more. And then after about 3 months, like I said, you'll start, you know, noticing, hey, I'm conditioned again. I'm not getting that crazy soreness after and all that good stuff. I took 2 months away a year ago from the gym. And it you know, that was exactly what I did. I came back, and now a year later, you know, I'm in fantastic conditioning, no problem, you know. So you will come back. Just accept what I said and be a little patient. And you got to leave the ego at home. You've got to be willing to just go to the gym wearing a sweater, wearing long pants where you're not showing your muscles, and just be patient. You know, not worry about the way you look. Because if you worry about that shit, you will never be able to come back. It's going to be a complete mind fuck. If you're a strength athlete, you're not going to be as strong as you were, obviously. You're going to notice, like, your strength is shit. 6 months is a long time to be away from the gym. So you have to accept that part. That's the first thing. It's a psychological thing.
Yeah, the other thing is you don't want to set yourself up for failure either, because you're going to get back into the gym that first day and you're going to have that, you know, that high, that adrenaline of getting back. You're going to love it. And the last thing you want to do is, you know, let that push you to go too heavy. Then you're out of the gym for a week because you're so sore. And then you end up not going back again. You know, you get frustrated. And then what? And then where are you? Then you're back to not going to the gym again because you haven't been going in 6 months. So obviously your lifestyle that you've been living doesn't include the gym. So it's real easy to just keep our, you know, your lifestyle. People are creatures of habit. We don't like change. So it would be real easy just to fall back into that and never go back to the gym again. I know that's not what you want to do, but if you beat the shit out of your body, you know, our mind can do funny things and convince us to do funny things. So yeah, that's just another reason you want to take it slow. You don't want to set yourself back nice and easy. You'll be thankful when, you know, a day and 2 days later you're sore, but it's not like crippling. And you're looking forward to getting back in the gym and training the other half of your body a couple days later. And I think, you know, it's not that much time. Think about the grand scheme of things. If you just take it nice and slow and work your way up for 3 months, 6 months, that's not that much time in your life. You just got to buckle down. You got to be responsible and you got to stick to it. Don't change course. Just stick to what you're going to do. Get back in the right way and you'll be good to go, no injuries, and good results for sure.
Yeah, I'll tell you, sometimes like taking time away from the gym like this because of shit happens or injuries or anything is a blessing in disguise. I mean, how many times do we see professional athletes get season-ending injuries and they're like crying and the fans are so upset, and then they come back the next year and they're actually better players. You know, and the reason for that is sometimes just sitting on the bench for some time like that can kind of refocus your mind and kind of make you mature as a person. Then you come back and you're more appreciative of your health, you know, and having a balanced life. So whatever caused your life to become imbalanced and make you away from the gym, now if you are rebalanced yourself, you can come back to the gym and start appreciating shit. And that's, you know, you come back stronger in the end for it. And it gives your body a break. It gives your joints a break. It gives your soft tissues a break. You know, it gives your muscles a break. It gives your mind a break. And, you know, you can come back. And you come back fresh. And I'll tell you, in all my years watching people come back from injuries, coming back from divorces, coming back from shit that happened in their life, the ones that are really, you know, positive, and they work hard and they bust their ass, they've always come back stronger. And it's always been the case with me, and it's always been the case with people I've observed. And like Matt said, the ones that don't come back, those are the ones that give up, because they just psychologically, they don't have it. So that's going to make the difference in your life.
All right, why don't we jump into, I did get another email, not part of our segments, but I thought it'd be a good one to talk about. It's another steroid-related question. I will read this one to you as well. He's north of the border with me. He's in Hamilton, and his name is Josh, and this is what he asks. He says, "Hey guys, I want to run my next cycle soon, and I will run 600 milligrams of Test E as my base. I want to kickstart with an oral and am stuck between Anavar, T-ball, or D-ball. On one hand, I love the idea of strength from D-ball, but on the other hand, I like the idea of not adding water with the other two. What do you prefer? My goals are to add mass, but try not to add any fat." This is a really good question. You can go any way you want. It's really, in the end, there's no right or wrong answer again. It's what you want to do. I will answer the part about what do you prefer. So a personal question, I would prefer T-ball. That would be my choice. I'm being older now, being 35. I'm not a big D-ball fan because I have no need to add that much, you know, water just to have a ton of strength and a ton of size really quickly. I don't like that anymore. I think that's cool for, you know, like 23-year-olds because they change so quick and they can act like meatheads. For me, like, you feel really good on it, so I like that, but it's not something that I would prefer. And then out of the other two, the T-ball and Anavar, I prefer T-ball because I feel it really gives me a nice sense of well-being that I don't get from Anavar. And I also do noticeably get stronger quickly. Obviously not as quick as D-ball, but I just really like how I feel on it. There's nothing wrong with Anavar. I've only used it a few times, and maybe I haven't used the best quality. I don't know because I don't have these things tested. But I always found it to be just too mild for me. Like, being expensive like it is, being faked all the time, you know, I just, if you're going to spend a ton of money on something, you should really notice it, and it should do exactly what you want. Anavar is never going to be something you're really going to notice. It's just mild. That's what it is. So for me, like, Anavar is good. Some people love it. T-ball is one of my favorites, so I'm a little biased, but that's what I would pick. You're only going to have to deal with the water from the testosterone, so you're obviously going to need an AI. That would be my go-to. The other downside, I think, if I was going to run D-ball with it, I'd probably see a lot more appetite increase in the beginning there, and you don't want to add fat. That's what he's calling out here. So I like T-ball being, or Anavar in that respect, being more dry. And I did have a hunger increase on Anavar that I didn't really have with T-ball. So I guess that's another one that would kind of go in that column for me. Steve, I'll let you go. It's cool to kind of give our preferences and, you know, back away from telling him he's doing it right or wrong. So what would you prefer?
Well, first of all, you know, a lot of people say, oh, orals aren't good to run. You shouldn't be running orals. You should man up and inject. Listen, I don't have a problem with anyone running oral steroids. I don't. Even if for a first cycle, I don't have a problem with kickstarting a cycle with an oral. Okay? And there's so many different orals besides what Matt mentioned. You got the D-ball, you got the T-ball, you got the VAR, but you also have the Anadrol, which is a crazy, crazy strong oral. And then, you know, you've got like Halo, which is a very, very strong oral. So, I mean, you have different orals. And then, of course, the Winnie, the Winstrol, which is, everyone knows Winstrol, you know. Everyone loves that name, Winnie. It sounds like Winnie the Pooh. So there's so many different options for you. Out of these three, you know, it's very simple. D-Bowl is going to really do a good job of increasing your mood, your appetite, your strength. It's going to cause a lot of water retention, though. It's going to give you estrogenic side effects, though. So that's something to watch out for. If you're going to run the D-Bowl, you really need to monitor your estrogen situation. You need to run an aromatized inhibitor with it. Otherwise, you know, it's going to give you crazy estrogen. I mean, it aromatizes like fucking crazy. As soon as you start taking it, you'll start, you know, it will start aromatizing into estrogen in the body. T-Bowl, okay, isn't expensive. Like D-Bowl. D-Bowl is also very, very cheap. But T-Bowl is very inexpensive. It doesn't aromatize. It's a dry compound. I have a lot of respect for T-Bowl. It gets a lot of bad rap because people look at the on paper and it's a weak steroid. It was originally used by the East German Olympic female team. So a lot of guys are like, oh, it's a female drug. I won't use it. Well, you're missing out because it's cheap, it's dry, and it really stacks well in a cycle. So in this situation, since you're stacking, you will really have some good results on T-Bowl, okay? It really does do a good job of binding to sex hormone, binding globulin, SHBG. So it really does a good job of increasing your free test ratio as well. And then you've got the Anavar. The Anavar is expensive. That's the drawback with Anavar. But man, it is a hell of a steroid and it's very underrated. Again, a lot of guys think, oh, it's a female steroid. I'm telling you, in a stack, this shit does a great fucking job. I actually hit PR in strength when I stacked Anavar with Tran. So Anavar does a tremendous job as part of a stack. So I would tell you to, you know, based on those traits of each oral, try one that sounds like a good one. And then next go around, try another one. And then next go around, try the other one. And see which one you like out of the three. You know, but experiment with them. And it's totally cool, like, to run them. You can run them in a stack, and they stack well. They all three of them stack very well. So I'm always a big advocate of guys trying shit themselves instead of just listening to the bro science and the parroting and your buddy at the gym and all this shit. Just try this fucking shit, you know, and see which one you like. And you can go from there. I personally, I'm not a D-ball fan anymore because that's not part of my goal. I don't like the water retention. I like to be lean and mean. So for me, I'm going to go with the T-ball. I'm also a cheap fuck. I don't want to pay for the Anavar. Anavar is expensive. Anavar is like more than twice as expensive as T-Bowl. So I don't want to pay for the Anavar. So I go with the T-Bowl. That's my choice out of the three. But that's me. That's my opinion. Matt's going to be different. This other, you're going to be different. And anyone else is going to be different. If you're a skinny motherfucker and you just want to fucking move the scale up, then you go with D-Bowl. Because you're going to move the scale with D-Bowl. D-Bowl is going to add a lot of mass quickly. It's going to add a lot of water retention. So if that's what you want, go with D-Bowl. You know, so it just depends. Everyone's a different situation.
You know, and even within those three, there are different ways to run them to get different, you know, effects. We see so many guys running their D-Bowl at, you know, 40, 50 milligrams per day. That's not outrageous. That's probably, you know, more normal than anything from what we read on the forums. That's a lot of water. That's a lot of D-ball. That's a lot of liver toxicity. There's nothing wrong. Like say you want to try D-ball, right? Tons of guys love it. It's, you know, seems to be something that the newer guys into cycling, they just love D-ball. There's nothing wrong with running it at 10 to 20 milligrams per day. That's going to be a completely different ball game than running it at, you know, 40, 50 a day. You're going to see much less water retention. You know, you're going to have less, you know, of the positive side effects too. But you can completely change the way you feel. I mean, you're already going to be running 600 milligrams of test. So running the D-ball at a low dose would probably be a better option anyways. So you could do it that way. The same thing goes for, you know, T-ball or Anavar. Guys run this shit at crazy high doses. You don't need 100 milligrams of either one of those a day. You don't. If you run it that way, it's going to be completely different than if you run it at 40 milligrams per day. So, you know, just even within that, you can decide how you want to do it. Just be aware of, you know, what drugs aromatize, what drugs don't, because that's going to matter. And just remember that no matter what you choose, you're still going to need a full PCT. There's no, you know, well, Anavar is more mild than D-ball. It doesn't change anything. You're still running a long ester testosterone. You're going to be shut right down to zero. The only other minor differences, and this is just me, like I said, this is kind of what our preferences are. If I'm going to run D-ball, I'm probably only going to run it 4 weeks because I just feel like on paper, it is extremely liver toxic. You know, and when comparing to Anavar and T-ball, which are both still liver toxic, but to a much less degree, I personally would want to keep D-ball to less time. T-ball, Anavar, I would have no issue going up to 6 weeks if that's what you want to do. Now, you know, this is kind of nitpicking here. We're talking about 2 weeks here or there, but that's just, you know, what I would prefer. You're still going to need to run liver support with any of them. So, you know, that doesn't change, but that's just the way that I would personally do it. So I completely agree with the, you know, the idea that Steve gave you with, hey, try one, try the other. That's the only way to really know how you're going to respond to these. You know, it's funny. You just heard two complete opposite examples. I'm not a huge Anivar fan from my experience. Now, is that me? Is it the brand that I use? You know, I don't know. But Steve had awesome experience with it. Hit records, loved it. So right there, both of us are experienced guys. And it's funny because we're both relatively the same age and size and everything. So that just shows you how different you can respond to things. So don't take what people say on forums as gospel. Same thing with buddies at the gym, even if it's a guy that looks like he's in great shape. You have to figure it out for yourself. And this is where keeping track as you run a cycle along the way is so important. You know, go back to the old days, get a frigging journal with some paper and pen and just write shit down throughout the day. I feel great this morning. I feel terrible. I have a headache. You know, every little thing, it's going to help you for your next time. And then, you know, when you are ready, you can go back and look and, you know, then you can compare when you ran the two different things. You know, more than just your stats, keep track of everything, your mood, your libido, anything around you, just that you notice, your appetite, all those things matter. So I think, you know, that's kind of what, this is why this is a long-term sport. You know, it takes a long time to understand our bodies. And then on top of it, when you're using these compounds, it takes a long time to understand them and how they work inside your body. So, you know, think for yourself and don't be afraid to try things.
Guys, if you want more information, evolution.org, forums, and then you can simply just put Dianabol. You can Google Dianabol, evolution.org, Toronabol, evolution.org, Anivar, evolution.org, Winstrol, evolution.org. Google it. You'll find so many different articles on them, and explains everything, the dosages, the history, everything about these compounds, so you can learn everything you want to know about them. Keep sending in the questions, guys. We're out of time. We appreciate everyone listening. Our next episode will be New Year's Eve, so we will talk to you guys then. Thanks for listening.